Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We are broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is February 22nd, 2018. In turmoil, most just don't realize it, but we are in that time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin, the world, and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar? Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please make this choice tonight. If you need help after this program, call me, and I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. And in emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. Now, you can always find updates with the breaking news, the Wichita Mission Church, radio program archives, contact information, all that is at our ministry hub, which is very simply prophecyhour.com. That's prophecyhour.com. Now, remember, we are a national satellite radio program, which is simulcast live on the net internationally, live on YouTube and on some FM stations, so please pray about supporting airtime. And on another note, let's do thank the people that listen to us worldwide. Places like Oslo, Norway, Dublin, Ireland, Sofia, Bulgaria, Tehran, Iran, Nigeria. And really, folks, you need to pray for the people there in Nigeria because it looks like there's a Christian purge going on there. And I'd like to talk to someone in that country, because I know people over there listen to me on radio and in other countries. In fact, if you are in another country, remember that we can still contact you and get in touch with you if you have something important. So an email will work, and we'll get in touch. Anyway, of course, cities in the old United States, such as Fort Worth, Texas, Kansas City, Missouri, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Portland, Oregon, San Diego, California. These are just a few places, folks, where people are listening to us. And, of course, Wichita, Kansas, hats off to you. You still remain the largest group of listeners, at least when the programs go to podcast later tonight. You folks over there in Wichita, you are the best. That is your city, and that is where our mission church is. So pray about really supporting us. I mean, you can even, if you don't have money, and I understand people are broke, but things like clothing, man, clean out your clothes closet and bring it over there. You know, things like that. You got food that's been sitting on your shelf forever, bring it over. All kinds of things that you could do. And you, after all, again, this is your city. Okay, please follow and share us on Twitter at Pastor Dan Catlin at Branch 77. Now prayer, and we'll bring on tonight's guest, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the program. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray. Father, I just pray that radio tonight goes according to your will, not our will, Father. Just give everyone out there ears and wish to hear the truth and understand it, Father. And so, in your Son, Yeshua HaMashiach's mighty name, bless this program tonight. Amen and amen. Well, just up in the news, I noticed President Trump considers pulling ICE out of California and let the state learn. That sounds interesting. Anyway, but tonight's guest anyway is going to be Frank Stefan. He's the founder of American Voice Radio. He has a daily radio program called The Frank Report. So tonight we're going to talk about liberal California and just see where everything leads us to. And so now, welcome Frank Stefan. Are you there with us, Frank?
I am, Dan.
Yeah, well, who's producing this program while you're gabbing with me?
I'm multitasking.
You're multitasking?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
hey, who do you think produces my show?
I don't know. You got a buddy that helps you
it's
out?
The
with
same,
that?
It's the same guy who is producing this show right now.
So we can blame it all on you, right?
As usual.
As usual. Well, really, though, you do. I think you do a great job. You know, when I came into radio, I used to just preach and then, you know, put it on the air. You know what I mean? A pre-recorded thing. And then you taught me how and goaded me to do what I do now and talk to people on, you know, on radio.
Hey, folks, I'm also trying to goad him into doing video, but I haven't had any luck so far. So, you know.
Hey, now, I am working on that really seriously. Well, you know, last year when I brought it up, you know, I had some responses of some help, and I got just part of what I needed. But, you know, I just guess I didn't have enough in me to carry the ball, just so much other stuff going on. But now that I thought it would be a hard task. But now that I talked to my wife into saying, yeah, she'd do a program with me every other week, and I like that, and I like the back and forth with her, but I think it would be a great program for video. What do you think?
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, it certainly would be technically easier because, you know, Linda's right there in studio with you, you know, as
right.
opposed to, okay, we got to get two people on two separate Skypes in two separate parts of the world. We got to split the screen. You know, we got to do, you know, there's technical things to do, but, I mean, it's all doable, you know. It's just, yeah, that's an easy way to start, though. You know, one camera, you got two people, you know, so you've got some back and forth, but from a technical thing, it's easier to start that way. You know, learn how to walk before
right.
you run sort of thing.
Right, and let alone my enthusiasm level, you know, is there. You know what I'm saying, to do this. So I thought it'd be a starting place. Yeah,
well, it is.
Like
it is. It's a great starting place because, you know, just like, and people think, you know, oh, hey, you know, just getting on the radio and talking, that's nothing, you know, it's simple. But, well, you know, I find it simple, but it a lot of people have a lot of problems with it. I mean, I ran a contest, I guess maybe, 10 years ago. Somebody was in the chat room. Actually, there were a few people in the chat room, and the discussion was how easy it is to just get on the radio and run your mouth, right? It's just, oh,
right.
boy, what's the big deal? It's easy, right? So I thought, you know what? I've heard enough of this. So what I did, I said, okay, we're having a contest. And it's a really easy contest. It's the first one who contacts me and wants to do it. I will give you a one, you know, every day, a 1 hour show every day for free. And we'll see how you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a taker, and he lasted 3 days.
Really?
Yeah, and the first 2 days he had scheduled guests, you know, that actually showed up, and, you know, they got through the shows, but then the third one, and Dan knows all about this, you know, he thought he had a guest, but the guest bailed at the very last second, and he was left holding the bag, and he couldn't continue.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not, everything is not as easy as it looks to be, and video is no different. You're going to find, you know, and that's why starting with one camera, two people in the same room that can actually just talk to each other and just have the camera, you know, show that, is a good place to start, because when you start getting into the, okay, I'm going to sit here, I'm going to do my show, and then let's say I'm going to have somebody else on a split screen somewhere else, and then I'm going to want to put, you know, documents on there that I'm talking about, just so we're not two talking heads, right?
Right.
You know, see, now you're adding things to do, which, you know, anybody who, you know,
right.
it's not as easy to keep talking fluidly and do things like that.
Yeah, that, you know, that, and let me address that for a moment. And yeah, folks, a lot of times, you know, see, okay, I'll contact my guest and they'll say, okay, I'm going to be on and, you know, I might send them an email right beforehand, but, you know, then you get, so when I start my program, I'm reading, you know, going through my byline or whatever you want to call it, my intro, And I don't know until, you know, I've already started talking if that guest is actually going to be there or not. Until Frank, you know, you send me a text, and sometimes you joke and say, well, I can't get him. But
yeah.
until it pops up, hey, he's on, you really don't know.
Or so I tell you, what guest?
Yeah, what guest? And then you go, what guest? And then so all of a sudden you're on live radio. So then, even if you have a plan, you know, I'm in the middle of doing a lead-in.
Better get a new plan.
And so then I've got to try to figure out, while I'm doing a lead-in, not to break. And it's hard to maintain that talk, you know, and also click around on this or see what you're going to do, even if you are pretty prepared. It's just hard. You know?
Well, yeah,
it's
because
hard.
Sometimes I will have to say, Dan, I can't get him. I'm getting voicemail, you know, or he's not on Skype or whatever it is. You know, it's just, hey, everything was planned, but it just, you know, everybody out there knows how that goes. I mean, everybody's made plans that, oops, you know, I thought I had this planned out. Well, not so much.
Yeah.
So,
famous last.
You know, but yeah. On the other hand, though, you know, doing radio, I like doing radio. And now I'll tell everybody out there, I'm going to tell on Dan. Dan doesn't even like to do pre-recorded radio anymore.
No, not at all.
Got the taste for live radio.
There's no power in it. You know what I'm saying? And that's the difference between, you know, people say, all the time email me and say, well, I like your podcast because they'll be listening to it from a podcast. But it's not. It's just, it's my radio archive. They want to call it a podcast. It's not a podcast. I didn't make it for the internet. I made it. It just happened to, it's being recorded from live radio. And that's a big difference.
Well, it is, and it's because the hosts and the guests all have a different energy. Is really what it comes down to. Is you've got a different energy when you're doing live, and okay, so now somebody's recording live. You know, it's just like a band. Okay, I mean, you know, you can listen to their studio recordings, and you know they've been edited and fixed, and boy, it's just perfect. You could put it on a scope and it'd be perfect, right? It's all just
right.
Technically perfect. But then you'll go either watch them or watch a video of them live, and it may not be perfect, but everybody can tell live energy.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's just a different kind of energy.
Yeah, exactly. I never thought of it that way, but yeah, that's absolutely it. And you know, I just can't do it. I tried for a while with the Mission Watch program, I think it was, to pre-record, and I just...
What's funny is you used to do it that way.
Yeah, I know. I don't like it.
Got the taste for live radio and just couldn't go back.
Yeah, live is the way it's at.
Well, it's like, you know, you could get used to eating dog food, and if that's all you ever had, you know, you'd happily eat dog food every day, but then you get your hands on a nice, big, well-cooked steak, and then, wow, after that, you really don't want to go back to eating dog food anymore.
Exactly. And live radio is the steak, you know. It is a steak. Sometimes it's not always done right, but
well,
just
and
like
that's
a steak,
that, and you know that's kind of the fun thing about live radio too, because things can go wrong, and it doesn't matter. You're still live. You got to deal with it, and how you deal with it can sometimes be funny. Sometimes people can like cringe and feel your pain, and you know it's just you don't get that in a pre-recorded thing. Because everybody, you know, when stuff goes wrong, they just edit it out. It's all start over.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, what we're doing, it's already out there. So, anyway, you kind of goaded me into video. That's going to work. And, it, you know, it's going to be my wife and I. In fact, I got to dig out that little camera that I got. I think it's going to be good enough. I don't know. I'm going to work on it this weekend and see.
Well, most of the newer cameras are really good.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that's a 720, you know, webcam sort of thing is really good.
Well, if I remember right, this camera that I have, you know, the logistics is more what I have to figure out because I'm not a tech person. You know what I mean? I know what you mean. After that, I don't know what to do much after that, and so we'll see. But that's the deal. The other problem is, see, Frank, I got to worry about where I position that camera because my office is just full of books and stuff, and I got to make sure everybody doesn't get my whole clutter yuck.
Well, you could just put it on your books, make it look like you're smart. Look at all these books I got. I got to be smart.
Yeah, well, the books are about to break the bookshelf. Well, you consider that. You know, whenever I have a new guest, that could mean a new guest can come on and that can be one of, or even the same guest, like Carl Gallup's. You know, he's been good for about, what, a book a year?
Uh-huh.
Well, you multiply that times other new guests and you get 10 guys sending you books during a year. Well, think about that.
Yeah.
If you have 10 people send you books in a year, that's at minimum of 10 books. But more than likely, I get 20 or more books a year. And so there's only 12 months in a year, and so to speak, and I have to read the Bible and do all the other things that I do. So, you know, there's a lot more than goes into it. And that's why it's easier for me. You know, I think I do pretty good interviews. People come on, they know that I tell them, look, I read your book, send me the book or read the book. And so I know about the subject that he knows about. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. You kind of got to at least read the, my style and everybody's different. I mean, cause I'm not saying this is the right way. I'm just saying it's my way is that when I'm going to interview somebody, I only want the very basics about them because, mm-hmm. See, I don't want to learn about you. I want to learn about you with the listeners on the air.
Well, you can't do that. That's my – now, I will read the book or whatever, but, you know, I'm like this. You know, guy, I broke him of the hat way at the first people get a hold of me and say, okay, well, you can call me and we can talk about the program before the program. No.
Yeah.
After that first program, we can call and you can talk to me all you want. But the first program that I do with you, I don't want nothing other than your short intro. I do want the book, but I don't want to converse with you about it because I'm like you're saying, I want to hear as the audience here, it's spontaneous that way.
Yep.
You know? I think that makes for a better program.
Well, and for me, that's how I like it. You know, other people really like to know everything. They like to get a script together. This is what we're going to talk about. These are the questions. These are going to be the kind of answers. You know, a lot of people like that. And I'm not just detracting away from necessarily an interview like that because they can be good, too, depending on, you know, how interesting the guest is. But it really does depend on that and how good of a guest, you know, how good they can present themselves because you're completely relying on their ability to entertain when you do that because you got nothing else.
Right.
There's nothing entertaining about a completely canned interview unless the guy you're interviewing is very entertaining just naturally. Then it's fine, but most people aren't. You know,
well, right. Especially, you know, you have a lot of these guys that are, you know, you get them on, you know what I'm talking about. You get these guys on air and you say, okay, you ask him a question that should take at least a paragraph to relax and answer, right? And they say, yes. Or they say, no.
That was
bad. And then you go, and so, you know, at that point, that's why I like reading the book, you know about
right.
the subject, you know, and go over it. Because then I can say, well, what about this? You said this in your book or whatever, you know, and I will, and I do always for that guest, I have backup questions that I can just access because I fell into that trap, especially right at first. You know, some of them guys, I mean, you know, they wrote excellent books, whatever, but when you ask them a question, they just, yeah.
The very first man that I interviewed wrote a great book. it was a fictional book, but it was basically, it was written as fictional, but it was meant to be, hey, look, this is what's going on, this is what's going to happen, this is, you know, his view of what's going to end up happening based on real things that were going on in the real world, but it was in a fictional setting. So it was a really good book. It was really interesting. And I had him on, and I actually talked to him first, and he seemed, it was really great, right? I mean, it was easy. It was like he was talking and everything else. So we get finally to do the interview on the air. Oh, well, we're on the air now, and it turned into a yes-no thing. And, you know, like I said, this was the first time I had ever interviewed anybody, and it was a little disconcerting. I got through it.
Your first guest did that to you. That's funny.
Yeah, my very first interview. I mean, I had done radio, but I just hadn't really interviewed anybody yet. You know, I hadn't
gotten
books and go, okay, let's talk about your book. Or I hadn't done that yet. And my first time out, I was like, wow, that's no fun. I don't know if I'll be doing that anymore, you know, because, boy, I was sweating by the end of the interview, man, trying to come up with things to say about, you know, to try to stay on topic. I mean, I can always scoot off talk about anything, but, you know, when you try to stay on topic and you're getting no cooperation, it can be disconcerting, especially if you're, you know, kind of new, and I was real new when that happened to me.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. You know, live radio is just that. And, you know, folks, we are on live radio, and that means that we're coming up to a break in about a minute and 30 seconds. So, Frank, tell them a little bit. You got a minute and 30 seconds. Tell them about your program and tell them when to find it.
My program is on at 2 p.m. Pacific. That's 5 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday. Then I have another one-hour program at 8 p.m. Pacific time. I do 2 hours on Monday night, and I do not do a Friday night. So it's Monday through Thursday with 2 hours on Monday. So basically I do 2 hours a day, but they're not together.
Right.
Right here on AVRN, AVRN, man.
American Voice Radio.
Right. And,
AVR.
And, okay, we've got, I'm going to give you the web addresses, because we have three. They all, you know, I've got two servers because of redundancy things. You know, if one goes down, you can still get to the website on the other. So there's theamericanvoice.com, then there's americanvoiceradio.com, and then there's the easy one, which is avrn.tv. Any one of them will get you there, and, you know, there you go. You check out the schedule, see who else is on, and I already gave you my time, so there you have it.
Okay, folks, we'll be back in 3 minutes if the producer allows it.
Don't go away. Pastor Dan will be right back.
This is Pastor Dan Catlin. You're listening to Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. Today, folks, we're talking about some different things with Frank. But first, let me give you a little plug for the Wichita Mission Church, but I'm sure we're going to do some talking about it. I just want to tell you, folks, that, wait a minute, we're talking about talk radio. Let's just bring Frank back on. There's no reason to go through that. I'll get it in. Frank, are you still with me right now?
I am.
Well, of course you have to be.
Even though you got back real fast and I wasn't ready, you took me by surprise.
Yeah, I know, because this is usually when I plug you know, the Wichita Mission Church. But I'm going to have to start mixing that up, too, because, you know, when I get to a podcast, it makes it too easy for them to go, why didn't fast forward through the commercial?
That's true.
And so there that goes, you know.
Yeah, people do that with ours, too.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just something I thought of. But anyway, meanwhile, okay, we were talking about talk radio, and of course, that escalating this program, which is going to be done this year, folks. Leave it to my wife, of all people, to encourage me to do this. But we are going to go to video. In fact, once I get it broke in, and I want to ask you about this, Frank, mm-hmm. I'm thinking about maybe figuring a way to maybe go to the after I get used to video, going to the Mission Church and actually interviewing some people we help. What do you think?
Oh, that'd be a great thing. I think people would love to see that. You know,
yeah, and
I mean, I think people would love to see it. I think people would love it if you put, like, you know, like a security camera all around and just showed them everything all the time. You know, I think people would like that. People don't know. Okay, so, you know, the majority of people listening have probably never been homeless. Okay? Now, I know some of them have, but most of them probably have never been at a mission. They've never stood in the shower line or the clothes line or any of that. You know, they don't know, so they'd love to see it, I think, you know. But then again, you know, the people who are in there probably wouldn't like being surveilled
yeah.
like that. But, you know, interviews is kind of a middle ground thing that people would still get to know the people. And, you know, people like that. You know, I mean, gosh, you got people adopting, not really adopting, but adopting people online. You know, that they, oh, well, I saw your video, I saw you, I'm going to send you this much money every month because I'm adopting you.
Right. Right, yeah, and I thought about that too, interviewing them and having them talk about their situation and what would change their situation. And you never can tell. People, you know, very well pick up and do them. You know, I know that there's a lot of people out there, not to pick on anybody, but there's a lot of people out there to listen to the program. They're not all, you know, broke people, so to speak, that might be something that hits their heart that they are totally financially able to do.
And I think it'd be good on, you know, I mean, just in general, but also people have a perception, and you touch on it now and again, but people do have a perception that everybody who lives out on the street and is homeless is some sort of drunk, drug addict, criminal sort of, you know, man or woman. And you know, those people are out there just like those people are in Congress. You know what? I would wager that there are more crooks and drunks in the United States Congress than there are out on the, you know, out in any comparable. You take 535 homeless people and the 535 creeps in Washington, D.C., and I think you're going to find a lot more alcoholics, a lot more drunken, nasty criminals in Congress than you are in 535 homeless people picked randomly. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I know them, and that is one of the hardest perceptions to get over when, you know, you're talking about people, you know, you say, well, I need support. They go, ooh, why do I want to help them dirty homeless?
Get a job!
Yeah, exactly. It's just get a job and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's not easy just to get a job and then get there and then look good doing it if you're living in a back alley or on a roadway and no access to, you know, a
hey,
shower.
Hey, Ben, I have worked, okay, when I got to Medford, I got a job at a roofing company, okay? So I
right.
got a job. I didn't have any place to live. I didn't have any money at the time. That's why I needed a job. So I got the job. Where did I stay? I slept in a sleeping bag in a field across from the roofing company. You know, and
right.
these guys used to, you know, people after a while, they kind of catch on, right? They get to know you.
Right,
and
right.
then they go, well, and then they look out, and here's me just popping up, standing up in this field and walking across the street, and they're going, what are you doing in the field? It's like, well, that's where I sleep. What? You don't have any place to sleep? No. I told you, you know. And they go, well, and at the roofing place, they said, hey, we got a, it was a gutted out travel trailer, right?
Right.
But it had a roof and it had a couch. And they said, you can stay in there till you, you know, get enough money to go live somewhere.
Right, right.
So I did. But in Hawaii, same thing. I stayed in a field. I had two jobs. I worked at a movie theater, and I worked at a construction site. And I never did get a place to live, even though I was getting a paycheck, you know. Under certain circumstances, in certain jobs, you can do it. Now, if I was going to try to work in an office building somewhere, it would have been more difficult. But you got to also understand, I got really good at being homeless. Okay?
Right.
Because I actually overcompensated because, you know, I will, and this is absolute, I'm being honest here, everybody. I
Uh-oh.
Dressed better when I was homeless than I dress now.
I have to laugh, but I can believe it because I know people. You know, there was this one homeless gentleman, and he was waiting on his disability. And he come into our clothes closet, always looking for, because we never kept them. We never kept suits. Suits and things like that, dress clothes, never, ever. Well, that was right at first, but we started keeping them as donations now for people because this particular individual, he came in a suit. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And, you know, he looked like a businessman. And, you know, I asked him one day, finally after seeing him.
You don't expect me to give you free food, do you, Mr. Dress-Up?
Well, it wasn't that. It was just, you know, and so, yeah, he says, well, you know, he said, look at it this way, Pastor Dan. He said, well, I look like this and I'm walking down the street. He said, you know, I'm not going to be harassed by the police.
That's
police
right.
Don't know I'm homeless. You know, and I went, oh, yeah. And he said, you know, I can get served. But, yeah, and so he did. But in general, most of the homeless, after they get adjusted, they find out places to clean up. They don't want to be dirty.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And, well, so they don't want to be harassed. And like the guy in the suit said, because the thing is, and it's not just about getting service, because, you know, a lot of times you're homeless, you ain't got any money. So you're not getting any service anyway because, hey, here's a news flash, everybody. It doesn't matter if you're homeless or not. If you ain't got any money, you ain't getting any service most places. But,
yeah.
You know, the thing isn't so much about service. It is about harassment because when you're nicely dressed and clean, you can go sit where everybody else sits, okay? You can go sit at a table outside of a Starbucks, and you can just sit there. Nobody's going to harass you. Nobody's going to say, what do you think you're doing here, bum? Get out of here. You know, but if you come there stinking and dirty and in rags and all that, man, they're not going to let you stay there because you're bad for business at that point. You know,
yeah.
So you got to take these things into account if you're going to live on the street. And the thing is, you know, people got to understand, too, there's a percentage, not a huge percentage, but there's a percentage of people who they could get off the street,
right.
But they don't. You know,
right.
they've had, a lot of people have a lot of problems in life, man, and, you know, things happen, and they just say, that's it. You know, I'm just going to do this. I don't care. And they're not miserable people necessarily, although, you know, there's a lot of miserable people out there that are homeless, you know.
Right.
But not everybody, and that's the perception that people need to. It's not a perception. The reality of the homeless is that just like Dan says when somebody says, well, Cash, I don't know what the homeless need. Well, they need what you need. It's the same thing in this sense. They're just like everybody else. You got people in every community that are bums, that are cheats, that are liars, that are drunks, you know, that are drug addicts. You got people
right.
like that in every. I named you the U.S. Congress for crying out loud. And I'll stand by that. I would put 535 randomly picked homeless people up against the 535 congressmen any day of the week and say, you know what? Let's put you all in a room and cut off your alcohol and see who starts squealing like a little girl after about a day. Yeah.
I know. I've looked historically at, you know, the backgrounds of some of these guys. It's out there to find if you want it, you know. And they're notorious, just like Boehner. wasn't that Boehner his name?
Oh, yeah, Boehner, yeah,
whatever. He's a wino, you know, had to have his vino, and he even looked like it, you know. I could tell by looking at that man that he had an alcohol problem. But of course, I have a trained eye, Frank. No.
Well, sure. You know, but the thing is, you know, and you just say, well, that guy's an alcoholic. Okay. But maybe he's a functioning alcoholic. Okay.
Right.
There's people on the street that drink a lot, too, but they're not – everybody who drinks on the street is not a problem either. You see,
right.
The thing is, all the things that go on in regular life, as people see, goes on with the homeless. It's just
right.
It's a microcosm of our bigger society. That's all. You got the same demographics.
Right. Yeah, and you know what? I want to take this around. Now, I know we're talking about this, and I'm going to bring it to back and tell you folks what you can do to help. But I want to make sure I get this in. You know, now I start off program talking about California that I was, you know, I was complaining about, but I had to laugh. But number one, first off, you know, California for the liberal state is just nuts. You know, their homeless population is just skyrocketing, Frank, and I know you know this, and it's just getting way proportionally out of hand. And one of the problems that they're having in there, and especially, you know, in some of the cities, is the tech people coming in and people still holding jobs but can't afford rent there, and so they're being pushed out in the street. Then you have the illegals. California is spending tons and tons and tons of money on the illegals because they need them for votes. Well, I just want to know what you have to think about this. I don't know if you read it or not, but Trump said, and he said he considers pulling ICE out of California and let the state learn. Now, he said he'd pull all the federal agents out. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, look, I'm all for thinking of different ideas to do stuff. Okay, because clearly what we've been doing is not working. Okay, so
right. Let's
just try something different. And, you know, I would not be opposed to that. Other than, you know, if he says, yeah, okay, you pull them out of California, but you better take half of them and stick them up here at the border in Oregon. Okay, because we don't want those people up here. You know, the thing
right. Is,
it's one way to go about it. And I wouldn't be opposed to it because, you know, like I said, it's a new idea. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't work. We don't know because nobody's ever tried it. But it wouldn't be my way, okay?
Right. Well, you know, I get his position. He's just frustrated that California making itself a sanctuary state. So, you know, and his attitude, which ends up seems to be working on so many things, is that, okay, well,
you deal with it.
And because I think in his head from reading it that he really thinks that it won't work.
Well,
it'll spike the crime rate ridiculously.
Well, he's learning politics, okay,
right.
As he goes, because as much as my way is my way and I would do it, it would be politically damaging. Okay, I would get a lot of heat over it, and so would he, you know. So
right. He's
looking for a way that's like, hey, look, oh, you don't like ICE around, you won't help ICE, fine. We'll pull all immigration out of it. Hey, why not pull the FBI out, too? Why not pull all the federal funding out? Why not pull everything out? See, that's what I would do. I would pull I would pull all the funding. I would load the state up with ICE agents, and I would let all these sheriffs and everybody know there that, listen, you may think you're the chief law enforcement agent around here, and you are for the most part, and I'm talking to sheriffs in California, but when it comes to immigration and naturalization, you are not. Okay? That is a power that the state of California gave up. Okay? When it ratified, when it joined the union and ratified the Constitution that says, listen, naturalization and immigration is an exclusive federal power. And if you'll remember back, remember when Obama decided, well, we're not going to enforce the immigration laws, and Arizona said, well, then fine, we'll enforce them ourselves in our own state. And they sued him in court, and the court found that, nope, it's an exclusive federal power. You can't enforce the law, even if they don't. It is a federal exclusive power. Well, that works both ways. See, I would force California to obey the law. I would send in armed ICE agents in there, and I would arrest the sheriffs if I had to. And then I would put Jerry Brown in prison under 8 U.S.C. Section 1324. I put Kamala Harris in prison over the same thing. And I'd go and find everybody who signed their name to any sanctuary, anything in California would be behind bars.
Yeah. Now, you know, there's a lady, I don't know what her name is, and you probably do, it's irrelevant, but she's a new lady that's in charge of Homeland Security. And Betsy, she wants to, that's what she wants to do. She wants to arrest the mayors and everybody that are doing these sanctuary things. And actually, that is the way that that would be my goal. You put just a couple of these guys in jail, let alone a mass arrest of what, you know, 10 mayors and a couple other people.
And the governor.
Put them in jail. Right. Put them in jail and let them stew there over the weekend, because I know they can hold you 72 hours without giving you a bond or anything. And let them sit there all weekend in with their immigrant buddies in the cell blocks, not someplace separate. Put them in the cell blocks. And, you know, I think they'd have a different attitude when Monday came.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't give them any bond. You know why? I would say, no, these people are flight risks. You know how it is, Dan. You don't get bail when you're a flight risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so that's what I would do, and they'd stay in jail. And then they would go to trial. Because, folks, really, look up. Just put this in Google. 8 U.S.C. Section 1324. Okay? And it'll come right up, and you will be... You'll be shocked if you're not aware already. You will be shocked that such a law exists. And you're going to start asking yourself, well, gee golly whiz, how come nobody's ever been enforcing this? I don't know of anybody who's ever had this enforced upon them. What's going on here? Because, you know, there's a provision, Dan. There's provisions for 5, 10, and 25 years in prison. And there is even a death penalty, which... you don't see that in a lot of federal laws, okay?
Right.
This one has a death penalty. You get 5 years if you're just harboring an alien, okay? The alien didn't do anything except come here illegally, right? And you're harboring him, that's 5 years in prison. Illegal alien, you're harboring him, he goes out and he hurts somebody, robs the store maybe, beats somebody up, something like that. That's 10 years in prison for you. If an illegal alien that you're harboring goes out and kills somebody... it's 25 years in prison, or you can be executed.
Really?
Yeah. I'm serious, folks. Go read it. I'm not making this up. Now, do you think... oh, and it makes it very clear in the statute that these sentences are for each and every illegal alien that you're harboring.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Those guys should be gone forever.
That's what I'm saying. But do you think in this whole state of California, do you think there's at least one illegal alien that Jerry Brown gave sanctuary to that has killed somebody?
Oh, my gosh. That goes without saying, actually. You know what I'm saying?
How's that rope feel there, Jerry?
Well, I don't know that any judge would actually give him the death penalty, but even just on the minorness of, say, a year in prison would change the whole spectrum. When all these crybaby governors and I'm not saying the full enforcement of it is wrong. I just don't know that you'd find a judge and go.
I get what you're saying. You're probably right.
But the point is, if you did something like that, even if they didn't even get any jail time, but spent a couple of weekends in the time in jail and saw that you were serious, I think it'd change it instantly.
I do too.
They're a bunch of cowards.
This would go.
They're a bunch of cowards.
Well, nobody wants to stay in prison, and you know, the law is the law, and if you're going to, you know, it really ought to be enforced, and that's what I would do. And a lot of people said, well, cut the money off to California, and yeah, that's something else to do, and I don't much care for Californians in general, so yeah, okay, fine, whatever, but the bad thing about it, why I would go for the enforcement and locking these politicians in prison is because every single time we've ever seen on any level, you know, the government wants more money and they don't get it, right? Either they ask the voters to vote for more money and they say no, or whatever it is. They want money and they don't get it. They always punish the people. Okay, they'll close down the libraries, they'll close down the parks, they'll close down all the things that people like. They'll close down the beaches, they'll close down all that stuff. But they'll keep all their employees, they'll keep all their assistants, they'll keep everything else, but they'll just punish the people. And that's what would happen in California. You know, these guys, if we said, oh, hey, no more federal money for California, only the people of California would suffer, not the politicians, and they're the ones that need to suffer. So I say enforce 8 U.S.C. Section 1324 and start locking these alien harborers up.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, in order to do that, you know, when we first got Trump elected, when Trump was first elected, President Trump, to be respectful, I believe that I thought he had a good choice in Jeff Sessions, but I don't think the guy's, I think he, one of two things, either he's clearly not the person who he presented himself or looked to be, or he may, in fact, the deep state may have something on him, but he is clearly not showing any backbone at all in my book.
Well, let me ask you, and this is what I started realizing the other day. I mean, I've been railing on Jeff Sessions and mad about him for a while. I actually, since he recused himself, I've been mad about it. It's like, what? You get on the job and 2 days later you recuse yourself from the biggest thing going on? Come on.
Right.
But ask yourself, and I'm asking you, tell me something that Jeff Sessions has done since he's been there.
Well, it looks like he's been going after MS-13 really strong.
Where?
Other than that, I can't say. What?
Where has he been doing that?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to go back through the reports. It just seems like that's what it's been going. That's what it's been said. I don't know.
Well, I mean, look, we got Rosenstein. He's been doing things, not good things, but he's been doing things. He picked Mueller. He did this. He did that. But what has Jeff Sessions actually been involved in except running his mouth about, well, we got to have more reefer madness in the country and go after the marijuana users? It's like, are you kidding me? We got gangs. We got aliens. We got all kinds of things going on, and you want to focus on going after marijuana users?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
You know, regardless of how you feel about marijuana, good or bad, it doesn't matter. You got to prioritize when you got a lot of stuff going on. You got to admit there's a lot of things going on for the Justice Department right now.
Well, right. The country wouldn't be so tied up in garbage if he would just have not recused himself. This whole investigation where they're finding absolutely nothing, blah, 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 the waste of money and everything else would have been changed by that. I think he should have just at least had the gut to have told Trump in advance, hey, I'm not going to get involved with this, so he could have got somebody
else.
Sure. Well, Frank,
he recused himself. One of Hillary Clinton's and Obama's cronies, Rosenstein, he's in charge now. What does he do? He gives Mueller this open-ended investigation when they're telling the public that it's supposed to be about, Russian collusion to, you know, rig the elections or something. Okay, fine, but look at what he's coming up with. He's coming up with financial crimes committed 10, 20 years before there ever was an election. That
Right.
was not his mandate to investigate, but yet somehow that's what he's doing. And it's because of Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, Frank, real quick, tell them where your program is again, because I got to get off so I can get rid of you so I can tell them how to donate.
I'll give you the easy one, abrn.tv. I'm on at 2 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Pacific time, Monday through Friday, except on Friday. Well, you'll hear my replay from the Tuesday, from the 2 o'clock show on Fridays at 8, so that's what you'll hear there. So if you missed it, you can pick it up. Thanks for having me on, Dan.
Okay, thanks, and we'll see you. We'll talk again, of course. All right, be blessed. Well, folks, that was Frank. Tune in and catch Frank being Frank about everything. And absolutely, it's a great program to share with you. And, you know, Frank will just tell you exactly how he feels about things. Anyway, folks, remember, pray about a donation. And a donation any size really does help, and we do need your help. And the Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. If you don't wish to help with the poor, you've been listening to this radio program for a while, consider a donation to help with radio airtime and to get the video stuff going. So pray about it. I know a lot of you can't out there, so please just really pray about it. But we do need your help to get out of this slump that we don't get out of for at least another month, usually. But remember, there is only one God. He is your Father. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His Son is Yeshua, HaMashiach. He gave his life for repentant sins, and he rose after 3 days and three nights on the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. Remember, always, 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 what? Be a blessing to others. Lord our God, Father, King, Universe, ask in Yeshua, HaMashiach's name, Father, that you would please bless and keep them, and that your face would shine upon them, and that you would be gracious to them and give them peace like no one or nothing else can. Until next Thursday, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the Internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.